Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
Come out here. If you come out here, if you want to enjoy the pool, the golf, the casino, the nice restaurants, which I will be taking part in after the show. Well, the nice restaurants. The weather's fine, but probably a perfect day yesterday. If you wanted to go to the pool, we'll see how it goes today. But John and he had one of his friends show up. They're going to go play golf, which they have a nice course out here too. So if you want to enjoy all the Golden Nugget has to offer, just a couple hours, 2.5 hours, depending on where you are in Houston, away, and do whatever you like. They also have a nice concert venue as well. They do stand-up comedy and music, so good place to be, and we're going to be here tomorrow as well. But let's talk to Willie P. He wants to talk some USMNT. They lose their friendly to Turkey yesterday. What's up, Willie P.? Or Saturday, was it?
Hey, good morning, Dale. How you doing?
What's up, man? How are you?
Not bad. I can't complain. I was like you. I was watching sports over the weekend that I really wouldn't pay attention to. Watched a lot of the Super Regionals for men's baseball. I was even watching, like, African under-17 qualifiers.
but sicko.
Let me ask you. Yeah, it was random, bro. It was a rough weekend. I spent a lot, and after a while, I took my son outside. I was like, you know what? If you're going to be the next Messi Ronaldo, we need to start now. So I just had him wearing him out all weekend long. But reason I'm calling because, so I know you saw the loss. It's the third straight loss under Poch, and you have to take it with a grain of salt because a lot of our big time players weren't there. But like, let's be real, Turkey, or how they pronounce it now, they're not some European giant. And it's just like, what is going on with CONCACAF? I know you saw Mexico lost to Switzerland. I didn't even see what Canada's results were, but I'm like, is Canada the best team in this region now? Because Mexico can't seem to find a coach or players. In the United States, I don't know what's going on. I will admit that first goal was a fluke. Not the one by Jack McGlynn, Houston Dynamo, what up? But the goal from Turkey were Johnny Cardoza tried to pass it across his box with the outside of his foot. Like, come on, dude, is that the talent we're putting on the field? I'm afraid for next World Cup. Like, I was telling my wife, I was like, I think we're going to get embarrassed. And if we do, it's going to set soccer back in the United States, you know, another decade or so. I just want to get your opinion on that. Anyways, love the show as always. You guys have an amazing day. And Sean A. Mace, what do you do, baby? Peace, fellas.
Well, Sean's not here. I mean, he may have heard that if he's out and about driving, but it's AJ. So maybe you have to figure out a way to incorporate AJ next time you call him if he's working. You did, I think you might have done it with Joe or Michael Carroll at one point. But as far as the match, yeah, I can't say that I care that much about the results because beyond the fact that it is labeled a friendly, you're just not going to see a lot of the guys. And Tyler Adams is there, so he's going to be a contributor. Maybe Chris Richards as well, Valles Robinson. But you have enough guys who are playing in spots that you don't expect them to play in when these games begin to matter. Maybe to you, or maybe not you specifically, Willie P, but the general you, I guess, out there. The Gold Cup might matter to people. It has rarely ever mattered to me, and the U.S. is treating it as such, whether it be their own players voluntarily saying, "Now I'm good," or the Federation saying, "Guys, other guys can stay home or get rest." It's not something I put a lot of stock into. Now, what happens in 2026, you can have some concern there, because while the results are probably more concerning to others than me, this isn't a team that has a lot that should say we believe in them. There's not a lot there to say, well, they'll pull it together because they've shown in the past they can't. For the most part, it's been a generation, whether you want to call it golden or not. Some of that has to do with actual success. So at least the assumption that this could be a golden generation, there's not a lot there. I mean, you'll win a Nations League, cool, but that's beating CONCACAF, as Willie P talked about, and how good can CONCACAF be? By the way, Canada did beat Ukraine. We know Canada owns the U.S., and I guess maybe so does Panama at this point. So maybe Canada is the best team. I mean, the Mexico back and forth between the U.S. Had some ebbs and flows, but I guess right now, I think Mexico may have won the last match, but for the most part, the U.S. has won the biggest matches between the two over the last several years. So if we're talking about the team up north, and by that I mean Canada's the best team in CONCACAF, who can really say the results would tell you anything else? But whether it will be a giant embarrassment in the World Cup, there's a real possibility. Will it set back soccer 10 years? You could change that in the next four. At the next World Cup, people would gravitate towards the team. It'd take a lot to get people back into it. But if the results change, people will show up. But yeah, at home in a World Cup where it's an expanded one, and you're going to be able to host, as I said in the previous show, the bottom should have been going in, at least initially, getting to a quarterfinal, which simply means winning a group stage, or excuse me, a knockout round game. The U.S. hasn't done that in the World Cup since 2002. They've done it in, like, Confederations Cups and, of course, Gold Cups and Nations League. They've done that. But as far as the biggest tournament, and Copa Americas as well, not the most recent one at home. But this is a team who doesn't know what it means to win a knockout round match. In fact, for the most part, whether the scores are competitive or not, at least from the outside, if you didn't watch the match, a lot of times they're not even really in these matches. We go back to Tim Howard against Belgium, where he had to have a remarkable day as a goalkeeper to keep that game level for the better part of 100 something minutes, and then eventually Belgium broke through with a couple, and the U.S. scored one late to make it interesting. But there's a couple of things you want to obviously get results. You also want to play a type of soccer which makes people think, okay, we're not just holding on for dear life. And that's been the U.S.'s way for years, where even when they were at their best as far as winning matches, it was a lot of, oh, this team's much better than us. We're going to have to do it on the counter, depend on our goalie and our goalkeeper and our defenders to be stout. They have tried to gravitate towards a more open style, where they're accentuating some of the talents they've kind of developed that has not led to a lot of success. And I've seen people say, hey, let's go back to the style where we sit back and we just hit people on the counter and be better conditioned and just be overall better athletes as opposed to better soccer players. So it's a big time. They won't be able to get any real prep with their best players in the Gold Cup. Now we will see. Now, about a year from now, if the Pochettino hire brings something more than what all the other hires have brought over the last now 20-something years, a scrap to get out of the group stage where you're down to the last day needing a result and in some cases even needing help, or maybe you win your first couple matches, something novel, and don't have to really worry about the last group stage match, and then you're getting yourself prepared for what could be a bit of a run. But still got a year plus, but to Willie P's point, not looking great. All right, well, thanks for the call, Willie P. He mentioned the Super Regionals. That was the sport that I mentioned that I that I don't really care about, but I was watching because what else was there to watch? And for most people, they know that I grew up rooting for the Canes and all the major sports. So, and when I was a kid, they were really good, particularly in football and baseball. So I was watching that over the weekend, just watching a lot of college baseball. And they took it to Game 3 in their Super Regional against Louisville, lost Game 1, won Game 2, and had a lead in Game 3. Eventually, Louisville came back and won that one 3-2. And once the final out was recorded, I was a little disappointed. Then I realized, man, you're being fake. Stop it. You can't have not watched an inning up until the regional last year and then really be disappointed about what's going on. So I had to catch myself. I was like, cut it out. You can go about your day, get ready to head out to Lake Charles because the game was yesterday, early in the day, or at least early in the afternoon. But for a moment, I was like, man, I really care about this game. And then I realized, no, I don't. Not that much. It's fine. I'll be fine. And I've already forgotten about it other than to bring it up today. But we have, I think, one game today. The final LSU did their thing. They're back in the College World Series. I got one game today. I think it's Duke versus Murray State, both teams. I think Murray State won yesterday to tie that series. So we'll see where the finals are next week. But if you want something to watch, I think starting on the 13th, you've got College World Series baseball. We had a couple programs here who were supposed to be really good in the state of Texas. A&M was the number one overall team in the country starting the year, and they were very disappointing. And, of course, Texas lost in their regional last week to UTSA, and I didn't even keep track of what UTSA did. They were a big story last week because of what they did to Texas, but didn't even really look at what they did over the weekend. But, yeah, I got caught up in it for a moment, and then you got to kind of catch yourself and go, you don't care about this that much. Cut it out. So there it is. College World Series baseball. Pretend to care, or maybe you do care, and we'll have games here coming up here shortly. Okay, we'll go to break with that. And UTSA got knocked out by UCLA. UCLA, which has been not a great baseball program. They've been okay. They make it back to the college baseball World Series for the first time since 2013. They take out UTSA in Super Regional. Okay, we'll go to break with that. It's me and AJ till noon here at the Golden Nugget in Lake Charles, and we'll do it all again tomorrow. But before that, we'll be back. Illuminati
all through your body. The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back to the show. And last summer on this show, there's a bit of conversation about video games, simply because EA Sports bringing back college football was very successful, and they're bringing it back again in 26. In fact, they do a little thing where they give people who they select a chance to play the beta version of a game. And of course, they tell people not to leak the clips, not leak videos of them, and people immediately will leak videos and images. And apparently, the result is if they catch you, they will ban your console. So people taking a risk there. But I bring it up because of this. Well, first, let me ask you, AJ, do you play video games?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay, so did you play the college football game last
mm-hmm.
year?
Yeah.
Or did you get it?
Most of
well, this year, if you get it and you play with your Cougs, the more money goes to the Cougs. So to get licensing agreements, you got to pay these schools. And, of course, the whole thing why the game went away was because of the players and they're not paying them. Well, they figure all that stuff out. And because of the game's popularity, the players will be getting a bigger chunk of that, beyond the guys who are actually like their spokespeople for it, like a Ryan Williams or Jeremiah Smith, like just a random player, the guard on North Texas will get a chunk of the cut. But now the schools will be paid based on how much you play them. So AJ, you may not want to play with the Cougs all the time, but if you want your Cougs to get more money, you should play with them more. So for example, let's just say, and this is from the article on Yahoo Sports. If you think of the hypothetical pool of $5 million for royalties, and if 1% of College Football 26 games are played using Colorado, Colorado gets $50,000. So wow. You just think about your favorite school, and if they're one of the more popular schools, they're going to get more money. If they are one of the lesser schools as far as popularity, they'll get less. So it'll be based on the interest. The EA has determined, I guess, why should we put you in a tier with this school if this school gets people to play the game more? So going forward, if you're out there and you love that game and you love your school, I don't know what your school is going to put that money towards, but whatever it is, if you want them to get more, you'll play with your school more, which is something first time ever that they've done that. So that's a change. So it's pay for play, but it's just for the schools in question. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, because I think last year tier one schools got $100K, and a tier four school got just under $10,000. So you can see the stark difference between maybe if you're playing with Ohio State or maybe you're playing with Kennesaw State. That's just how they broke it down. So just be aware, man. All your buddies, and if they're Cougs, make sure they play with the Cougs. Back Willie Fritz in all ways, not just going to the games, but making sure you play with them, because it means more for the school. So that's there it is. There it is. I don't know. I know it's Shasta, but does Shasta have a slogan, or what's the slogan for the Cougs? I don't even know what it is. I know you throw up the H or the paw. I don't even know. I need more into the Coug lore. Does Shasta have? Not that it talks, because you know it's
right. I'm about to say I've never heard Shasta ever.
Yeah, but does it? Do you guys have a hashtag around the sports teams, or is that not a thing?
I mean, I guess there's some like eat 'em up Coug, something like that. I mean, there
it is. Eat 'em up. There it is. That's the one I was looking for. That one sounds most familiar to me. So if you are part of that ilk, or hell, you could be an A&M fan. We carry their games here. Texas the same. We don't carry the games, but understood. A good-sized Texas fandom in the city, go support your school in all the ways you can, and maybe beating the crap out of some team online as a Longhorns, send some money your school's way. So there that is. So that's an interesting thing. And also something came down on the side of the players who did not get a bag during their time. There was a settlement there where players from the past will get money, not necessarily from EA, but just overall. Because of what NIL has become for the current players, there'll be back pay to players who were not paid while their name, image, and likeness was used by their colleges or just NCAA as a whole. And of course, you can throw in all the networks who did it as well. So a lot of things going on in the world of college athletes is just playing out in different ways with the settlement coming down. And you know, I'm not against it. While I was pissed off because the game went away because of all the lawsuits, now that everything's been settled, why shouldn't a guy like Baker Mayfield, who now he's made a lot of money in his career, so he's not hurting, but why shouldn't he get, as I guess you would call it, back pay for what he accomplished and what Oklahoma was able to do selling his jerseys, among other things? So we'll see how all that plays out. And speaking of college quarterbacks who were successful and went on to the NFL, you see Lamar Jackson, now this happens all the time. Guys just don't show up for things, and as far as when it comes to bonuses, but he didn't show up for OTAs, so he is out $750,000. And, of course, once again, another guy who's made a lot of money, so it won't matter. But I was trying to think of a comp. I always try to bring it to more real-world things, and it all depends on how much you make in the world when you're not an athlete. But I'll put this question to you, AJ. Let's just say you had a show up to a meeting bonus for ESPN 97.5. And you know what? You'd rather not drive in, but it's a bonus. And how low would it have to go money-wise for you not to show up? Like, do you think if it was like, let's say, oh, you get free lunch. I'm not showing up for that. But they're like, hey, part of showing up, part of your deal is you show up to every meeting, you get an extra $200. Is that too low?
I would do that probably.
Now I'm just throwing out numbers. I don't know how much anyone makes here. I'm just trying to figure out, as far as a real world scenario, what would be too low of a number? Because apparently $750K is too low for Lamar. Like, I'm sure he's got a lot of things to do. This is not me questioning his bank account or how busy he is in the offseason. But I just feel like, man, if you're just giving me $750K for a workout bonus, I think I'm just gonna be there.
Yeah.
Why just give away the money for no reason? It was negotiated as part of your deal, a deal I think you, for the most part, negotiated yourself. All you got to do is be there. I don't want to get into the implications of people like, you know, people talk about, well, for a guy who's never done much in the playoffs and never won the big one, why is he passing up OTAs? I don't want to get into that. I'm just thinking about the financial implications. Look, man, I don't know what they ask a quarterback to do during workouts. It's probably not that strenuous, particularly for a guy of Lamar Jackson status. I might toss away $750K just to be in shorts and a T-shirt and being in Baltimore. I'm sure he had a great trip planned or wherever he decided to. Maybe he had a charity event he had to go to, and that took precedent. I just don't know, man. Maybe I just rescheduled the charity event for another weekend when we're talking about $750,000. Yes, I know. I'm aware. He doesn't need it, but it wouldn't hurt to have it. Maybe he gave that $750K to a charity. I don't know, but I just love that that got negotiated, and then a couple years later, he's like, yeah, you know what? You can keep your $750K. I'm not showing up. But when you're Lamar Jackson, I guess you can do that. We'll see what that team is. They did give Rashad Bateman his deal, although they were talking about trading him. That story came up that there was some interest in trading him, and they decided to go ahead and give him the extension. But I think Sean and I talked about it last week, or maybe it was with Joe. I don't remember. That team isn't built off of wide receivers. It's built off, at this point, Derrick Henry, Lamar, and Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews. So securing Rashad Bateman and giving him a deal, that's cool. But he's a guy, maybe not easily replaceable. They've been waiting for that guy to be a big-timer for several years now, and they rewarded him with a contract. But he's more of an ancillary player for them because the tight ends, the running back, that offensive line have always been the most important parts of the Ravens, even though Lamar has become a very proficient passer, despite some of the uninformed opinions about what he is as a passer. You watch him on a day-to-day basis, or at least week-to-week basis, as far as the games are concerned. He has improved remarkably, and he was great last year. The only reason he didn't win the MVP is because the narrative was it was time for Josh Allen to win one. Like, the numbers for Lamar are better. Josh Allen hadn't won one. His team record-wise was better, although I believe the Ravens beat the Bills in the head-to-head. Of course, the quarterbacks aren't playing directly against each other, but that was a guy who could have won another MVP award the way he played. And look, as far as the playoffs are concerned, he did turn the ball over. I think he got caught in the backfield and fumbled the football, and then he was on the verge of leading a comeback, at least to tie the game, a couple different times. Mark Andrews let him and the team down with the drop on the 2-point conversion and then the fumble when he was going to pick up a big gain. So while that will go as a loss on Lamar Jackson's resume, I don't think you can put what happened last year in the divisional round against the Bills in Buffalo against him. He played more than well enough to win. He just got to do it again. That's just going to follow him. As much as Josh Allen doesn't get that, he didn't have that conversation around him because, generally speaking, you look at some of his numbers, he hasn't had the underperforming numbers that Lamar has had in some of his playoff games, but they're both guys in the same spot. And it's tough for those guys when you have Patrick Mahomes in the same conference. It can only be one of those guys, and generally you're going to be playing Patrick Mahomes in the AFC title game. That's just how it's always been since he's been a full-time starter. Of course, Brady had his place there before he retired. So I wonder who wins one first. I think Baltimore's the better team. They just play in the better division, so it may very well become a point where Lamar Jackson is going back to Buffalo again, simply because you could say he's a victim of the strength of the AFC North, while Josh Allen's competing against the Jets with Justin Fields, the Dolphins with an often injured quarterback, and then the Patriots, who have Drake May. So if we're talking about level of competition to overcome, that is one where Josh Allen has the advantage. And, of course, then you think about what's happening in this division, what the Texans can be with C.J. Stroud and the new hierarchy when it comes to their offensive side of the ball. You have Nick Caley, you have Cole Popovich, who, from what I've seen, a lot of positivity from the outside looking in. I'm not sure where that's coming from since both are relatively unproven, but we had one of the McCourty twins on. We played the audio from him. I think he was talking to Chris Sims, and he had nothing but positives to say about Cole Popovich. And certainly Nick Caley coming from the Rams, he was getting good pub as well because of what that Rams system is and what they expect CJ to be able to thrive in here in town. A lot of it is projection and speculation, but I think a lot of it has to do with what CJ's first impression was. People liked what they saw, maybe even helped that they were a bit surprised by what they saw, considering Bryce Young was the consensus number one. Then you get those type of performances from CJ every week, and first impressions matter so much. And everyone's under the impression that as long as you get competency in Houston, that this team will be really, really good offensively, or at least much better, because if you start to look at success rate last year, it was even worse than you think. I think they were like in the 30s, and there are not a lot of teams that can be in the 30s, so they were one of the very last teams when it came to success rate. It was just a bad offensive performance when you start to get into some of the analytics of it beyond some of the counting numbers. But they've made the changes, and Nick Chubb is next, it looks like. So the Texans are active as they try to get over that ceiling that they have not been able to break through, which is that divisional round. So while they're doing their thing, the AFC isn't getting any weaker. So it'll be something to keep track of as the as we keep going in the offseason. Will there be another surprise signing? Is there a well? We got Nick Chubb. Is Jair Alexander someone they would take a look at? He is. I think he's now officially available. The Packers cut their star corner, and we're going to have a quote coming back from one of their decision makers, pretty damaging when it comes to Jair Alexander and what the Packers have been living with. So we'll get to that when we come back.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
So I'll get to what Mark Murphy said about Jair Alexander. Looks like the Packers may be trying to trade him. That always pops up where all the reporting is he's going to be released. He will be released. He is released. And then you hear right at the end that they may be looking to trade him. We'll see if the Packers get that done. And we'll hear, well, at least I'll tell you what Mark Murphy said about Jair Alexander here. But, Eric, if you want to get back in, you can. I was going to get to you. But, Eric, or anyone else, you can get back in, 713-780-3776. Okay. So, Jair Alexander been a good corner for a while. Loves to talk. If you watch him play, you'll just see the interactions between him and wide receivers. He loves to let it be known that he's there. But he's a guy who hasn't played very much. We talked about it this morning, where he's only played more than seven games once in the last four seasons. He played seven the last two seasons, or 14 combined, then he played 16 in 2022, and then he played four in 2021. And this is what Mark Murphy said. He was on with the local station there, WBAY, and said he's obviously an elite talent. Unfortunately, he just injured a lot. Unfortunately, that's a big part of the game. And he said, hey, we're used to playing without him, so while he won't be here in the future, it's not something we're not accustomed to. Sure. And while there's a talent there, and there's always that promise that he'll be great for you, and you hear that name, and everyone's thinking, oh, I'd love to have Jair Alexander. Well, you'd love to have him play. And it was one of the early knocks on Derek Stingley was his lack of availability. That changed last year. And does that mean that's going to be a consistent thing? Because generally when guys don't play and get hurt, they are guys who get hurt again. And thankfully for the Texans, Derek Stingley did not. And he played all the games last year. The question will be is that something that we can expect going forward? He's only 23 years old. He's got everything in his favor. Great player. Contracts. He's straight. And he proved when he's on the field to be, if not the best corner, certainly top two. So he played nine in 2022, played 11 in 2023, and played all 17 last year. First team All Pro, Pro Bowler, all the things you want from a guy right before you pay him, and he's well worth it. You just hope he's more past the injury issues as a young player, and we'll see if he can do it at 24 years old. Can he produce another year where he's playing full time? Because if he can, we're talking a dude who's well on his way to multiple All Pros, and who knows. When it comes to his ability to take the football away, how impactful he can be, well, we do know. And if that's going to continue to happen, who knows what levels he can reach. All right, Eric's back. We'll get to Eric here. Anyone else who wants to get in, they can as well. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Dale. How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
You're talking about Josh Allen and the AFC East. He benefits from that. But Tom Brady benefited from the AFC East for 20 years. There's nobody in that conference or that division that was really good. And he had the easy sliding into the playoffs almost every year by sharing that first round bye. Also, with Forrest Whitley, do you think any other team will pick him up, or do you think he'll come back to Sugarland and try to give it one more go? I'll hang up and listen.
Eric, you don't have to push me into criticizing Tom Brady. Me acknowledging that the AFC East isn't good during Josh Allen's tenure doesn't mean I won't point out that the AFC East wasn't great, and that's been kind when Tom Brady was there. And as you mentioned, because of that conference, or at least that division, he continued to, at least back when there was a first and second seed who got byes, always play on the second weekend. Look, he validated those regular seasons with winning titles, so there will be no criticism there. But yes, it was an easier road to make the Super Bowl when you're always playing a home game in round two, and now you're in the AFC title game. And depending on what happened, whether you're the one seed or the two seed, depending on what happened on the other side, if you were the two seed, you could be playing a home game. So yeah, you don't need to get me to say maybe Tom Brady wasn't as great as he actually is, just because that's my hater mentality when it comes to the Patriots. But as far as Forrest Whitley is concerned, does he take an assignment? I don't think so. It's generally not what guys do. I referenced in the first segment about Abreu doing it and how surprising it was that he would go back to where the Astros have spring training and participate in games I never knew existed, just to try to get back, and it just didn't work out for him. Will Forrest Whitley do that? I don't know what his mindset is. You know, he kept fighting to try to get on the Major League roster, and he was on it. He just could not produce. I don't think he'll quit baseball, but then that's just me reckless speculating. I don't know how Forrest Whitley feels about his career. He may think, this is it, I'm done. But it's certainly not how guys approach that. We'll see. As far as the Astros are concerned, I don't think he's going to Sugarland. It would surprise me if he did it. Not because I know him. That's just the precedent of how players generally take these types of deals. They just maybe his agent knows something. We had someone mention that he's pretty talented. I think we had a caller mention he's pretty talented early. I think it was maybe Keith. I don't remember if he's or maybe it was a spotter who said it in the soundbite that he's. If people still see that talent, he'll have options, and his agent will have already kind of. Taking a look around the league and ask people what they think, and maybe there's no need for him to go down to Sugarland. There might be a spot available for him someplace else with an organization that he can start fresh, which may be what's best for him right now. But yeah, if you missed it, Forrest Whitley's been DFA'd, been with the organization since before this run really started, before the first World Series run. And he was always, at least from me, judging how people talked about him, he was supposed to be next. He's supposed to be a top of rotation guy they depended on, and it's been anything but that. It's been the Frombers and the Javiers and the Urquidys and the Blancos and others taking over that spot from Whitley. Not that he was really in contention, but just the thought that he was going to be a main member of the rotation. There's been all these other guys who we didn't think much of. Luis Garcia, throw him in there as well. Of course, there's a lot of guys that I'm mentioning that are hurt or not available, just the way it's been for the Astros. And fortunately, has had his own injury issues just now. As we heard from a spotter earlier, while talented, it just wasn't meant to be for him on this roster for a team trying to compete. And throwing him in not really high leverage situations and watching him not come through was enough. So, fortunately, done as a Houston Astro. We'll see what he does going forward. So, you think about him. He was supposed to be with the Correas and the Bregmans and the Kyle Tuckers. And, of course, Jordan came around in a different way. But he was supposed to be one of those guys, too, where we're talking about a foundational piece of this organization. And it just turns out that those projections were wildly inaccurate for several reasons. So, as much as they've done finding pitchers, maybe not out of the blue, but not with the pedigree of Force Willie, he's one of those guys that you miss on. So you'll take that in the balance of it all. We're talking about those names I mentioned. You'll take finding those guys and missing on Force Willie when it all shakes out. So you can't get them all, and that's one that's going to be a miss for them. And more importantly for Force Willie, let's see what he wants to do. If he wants to continue to pitch, more power to him. If he doesn't, obviously he's well within his rights to make that decision. All right, we will we'll get the break here. We got one more segment to go. If you want to call in about anything before we wrap it up, you can. That number is 713-780-3776. We're here at the Golden Nugget. We'll be doing shows tomorrow as well, starting bright and early, 7 to 10. We'll see hopefully we'll get the video stream back and up. I think it's because we're on the public internet, so while we can, like AJ's been dealing with it all morning, while we can connect, for whatever reason, it's not picking up video. Normally, there's more of a dedicated Wi-Fi that we use when we're in the DraftKings Sportsbook. Just wasn't meant to be today. Hopefully, that'll work out tomorrow. We can be back and can watch John and Lance tomorrow. So we'll try to do that tomorrow for you. All right, we'll go to break with that. We will be back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at the Golden Nugget Lake Charles. Here's Del Olalea.
Final segment of the show, but we still got time if you want to get in. 713-780-3776. Okay, tomorrow we've got Texans mandatory minicamp. So the questions about CJ Stroud will begin again if he doesn't throw. We'll see how that plays out if he's unavailable. I mean, it's a nice job by the Texans, because other than noticing that he isn't out there, there has been no real news about what the issue is, other than what Aaron Wilson reported earlier, that there's a bit of a shoulder problem. So they've done what they wanted to do, kept that quiet. They have a couple more days here before they step away for a little bit, so we'll just see how many camps go. And whether he'll be available for that. And then we'll have D'Amico not want to answer questions, but answer them in a way, if he's not throwing, that gives you no more information than we already have. So that's his job as the head coach, to, I guess, divert and deflect attention from a potential injury. Or maybe he's being truthful and when he says, and what he says, and he says it's a general soreness. So we'll see how that plays out. Texans mandatory minicamp beginning tomorrow, and we'll see if Damian Pierce is there. He's another guy who has been absent, and we don't know why, because those have been voluntary. We'll see if Damian Pierce does not show up, and with the Texans bringing in Nick Chubb and, of course, trading a pick to get Woody Marks in the draft, and Joe Mixon, whether he's available or not, he's still going to be available or not tomorrow. He's still going to be a guy who, when the season comes around, is going to be your RB1. So Damian Pierce may be out, because Dare Ogunbowale is back as well. So this could be something where they've been trying to trade Damian Pierce, and there's a reason why he hasn't been around. Now, I guess they'll have to answer questions about him, too, if he's not there. So a couple things to look at tomorrow as the Texans are back with their minicamp. As far as the Rockets are concerned, their reporting has been consistent on this particular player. Fred VanVleet is someone they have every intention of keeping, according to Mark Stein. There have been some rumblings that a potential sign and trade where Fred is signed and sent someplace else, that isn't out of the realm of possibility, but the belief is that Fred VanVleet will be back with the Rockets. What that salary will be at, who knows, but it looks like no matter what it is, he will not be on a one-year $40-plus million-a-year team option deal that is in his contract when he initially signed it. So it looks like Fred, whether it's here or someplace else, is going to get himself a new deal. If we're talking about starting point guards, Fred is not being paid in a real comparison to what his production is as far as a fair one. I mean, look, you get your money. But if we're just talking about him as a player, he probably isn't in the $40-plus million range as far as his contributions, intangibles aside. So the number, it's fun to think about. The number will be interesting because then people will start to compare Fred's new contract to other players of that salary and what they actually bring to the table. So we know the Rockets like him, and maybe the word should be love. But right now, expect to have him back. But maybe if it's beneficial to the team, of course, Fred would have to agree to it. Maybe a sign and trade happens. That is the much lesser of the two options if you're going by what Mark Stein is saying. Now, I remember what happened with Blake Griffin when he was a Clipper. Now, the Rockets and the Clippers were in very different situations. That was the end of Lob City, where DeAndre Jordan was someone who wasn't really a useful player anymore for them, and Chris Paul was on his way out as well. And Blake Griffin was supposed to be the centerpiece to a new Clippers era, and they had him come to the arena back when they were still playing. It's obviously still playing at Staples or whatever it's called now. And they did the whole dog and pony show where they had, hey, we're going to have your name in the rafters. This is what it's going to look like with you at the centerpiece. And he was a free agent, so he could have gone anywhere. And they convinced him to stay. They convinced him to sign a deal, be the guy, be a Clipper, Mr. Clipper, for the rest of your career. And then they traded him before the trade deadline the same season to the Pistons, and back when the Pistons were no fun. So I don't think that type of thing is going to happen with Fred Van Vliet. If they do bring him back for 3 years, I don't think it's going to be trade Fred before the trade deadline. I think if Fred signs a 3-year deal and he's not moved this offseason, we can expect Fred to be here for quite a bit. And then we'll just have to get accustomed to what we've really, I guess, are already used to. The nights where he can't hit a shot, and then there'll be nights where he can't miss. We saw that in the Warriors series where for what was it, 3 games or at least 2 games, Fred was their best offensive player and led them back to tie that series at 3 apiece. And then, of course, Game 7 happens. And what happens against the Warriors traditionally happens. They don't allow the Rockets any joy. And they put the Rockets away thanks to the likes of Buddy Hield. So those are just a couple of quick things. And Fred's current deal is, if it was the club option that is exercised, is right around $45 million. But considering that feels like a giant overpay, you're probably looking at more years and less money for Fred, but he will be a Houston Rocket going forward. So whether you love that or not, I think we should all get prepared for that. Now, AJ, I know you're a Cowboy fan. You're not a Mavericks fan, are you?
No, I'm not a Mavericks fan. I'm Rockets.
You're a Rockets fan. So yeah. When I give you so let me put it to you this way. Would you rather have Fred for 3 at 93 or one more year at 45, nearly 45, and then you're done with Fred Van Vliet?
So 93 is $31 million per year, right, I think?
Yeah, I just gave her a random number. But he gets more money over the course of 3 years. Obviously, the salary comes down quite a bit per year. All right, let me give you a different number. Three for 100. It's still $33-plus million a year or whatever, but a little bit more in the 100. He hits the $100 million mark. Or you only have Fred Van Vliet for 1 year with the club option, and he's gone after this. Which one is more appealing to you?
Well, ideally, I wouldn't want to pay him $40 million, but I guess it just depends, because if you look at his stats from last year too, I mean, he was a little injured, but also he wasn't, like, from an efficiency standpoint, wasn't as efficient. Now, he played good in the playoffs, like, through the later few games, but I would maybe do it 1 year just because, I mean, if the rumors are true, they want to apparently explore more time for Reed at the point guard position and other stuff. So, I mean, maybe that, because, I mean, you do want to have these younger guys continue to flourish with each other, but we'll see.
You know, while that nearly $45 million thing is startling, I think I would rather just do the one.
Right.
And allow, while you wouldn't call it a mentorship of Reed Shepherd, if he's going to get more time, and with the expectation that you would think he'd be the point guard of the future. Am I going to lock myself into Fred VanVleet? Now, depending on what the number is, a lot of people think when they make signings that a contract is tradable, then you realize maybe not so much. So if you sign Fred to a 3-year, $100 million deal, whatever the number actually is, and he performs like he has performed, particularly last season, is anyone, when it comes down to, okay, Reed's our guy, we want to trade Fred VanVleet, are you going to get anything of value for him, or are you going to have to attach something? Of course, Fred's salary can be made part of a bigger deal. If you do bring in a star, Fred's salary could be used to help facilitate that deal. But let's say the superstar trade does not come about for whatever reason, and not that Giannis was at the top of the list. We don't know what the Rockets' thinking is there, but saw a report a weekend from Jake Fisher, who can be hit or miss, but he's saying that the feeling in Milwaukee is that Giannis won't be making a request to get out, and he'll likely stay. So let's just say we remove Giannis off the board, and a Fred contract can't help facilitate that deal because he's not available anymore. And no superstar decides Houston is the place for them, and you're looking to get rid of Fred. Is Fred for two more years, and maybe try to do it at the deadline for 2.5 more years at $33 million a year, something people are going to find appealing? I don't know. Of course, if Reed Shepard's growth isn't something that leads him to be the starting point guard, maybe you would rather have Fred than any of the other options. So there's a lot for the Rockets to consider. I think I would take the chance that either I can use Fred's big team option deal to facilitate a superstar trade, or I just say, hey, expiring contract, appreciate what you did, but signing you for nearly $100 million over three seasons isn't what I want to do. I think I would lean to the team. I would lean to the club option and say, hey, depending on what type of year you have, maybe we'll have a discussion in the offseason about what your value is. But right now, I don't know about guaranteeing him more years, but it appears that is the likely option. So we'll see how that all plays out over the next couple weeks as the finals are still going on, so we still got some time. But once that ends, we're deep into the draft and also into the trade market and free agency. So we're not that far away from what might be a big offseason and movement in the NBA. And the Rockets seem right in a position to be part of that. And with that, we are done for the day. Paul Gallant is coming up next, followed by the Killer Bees. John Lance will be back tomorrow here at the Golden Nugget, and I'll be with them for that show and then follow them with this show till noon. AJ, thank you for what you did today. And since we're done for the day, what does that mean? Thank you, John Gruden. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Open the door to huge savings now at Menards. Enhance the appearance of your home with a new stylish garage door. Choose from our large in-stock selection of ideal garage doors or design your own using our free garage door designer in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on ideal garage doors. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save.